Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, the one and only Stephen A. Smith, coming at you every Wednesday night over the airwaves of Sirius XM. POTUS Radio, channel 124. Number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. Once again, that is 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. Got a lot of stuff coming at you today. Scott Jennings from CNN, Republican conservative commentator, making waves with a best-selling book plus his commentary, appearing on CNN most nights. He will be in the house to talk with us. And of course, representative out of the great state of California, the one and only Ro Khanna, will be on the show with us as well. Looking forward to talking to both of them. Two different perspectives, two different points of views. Definitely coming on the show to express themselves. I have something to tell y'all, though, because I got something. And I'm going to get to the calls a little bit earlier today because the interview is going to be a little bit later. So again, 866-96-POTUS is the number to call up. I'm going to get to something that I want to say. And I got people in here watching the show, you know, because Sirius XM's the real deal, and they got great folks looking out for me, always taking care of me. My producers are sitting there looking at me. I didn't tell anybody what I was about to say. I didn't tell a wonderful Jennifer in Washington, D.C. what I was going to say. I didn't tell anybody what I was going to say. I'm going to say it now to the American people everywhere. You do not have to worry about Donald Trump trying to run for a third term. It's over. It ended over the last couple of days. Why does that make absolutely no sense to y'all in y'all mind? Because you're saying, hey, he was going to try to do it anyway, even though some people were speculating he was going to try to overthrow the 22nd Amendment of the Constitution and get a third term in office. Watching what he has done with all of these boat strikes in the Caribbean while you letting off a dude that is alleged to assist in funneling over 400 tons of cocaine to the United States of America. That level of inconsistency. And then turning around after calling the Democrats crooks and all of this other stuff, letting off a former representative, pardoning him today, and it was bribery and fraud charges that were leveled against him. And you pardoned him and he's a Democrat. Why does that make sense? Why is it that we should be thinking about it today and looking at it and saying, we no longer have to worry about a Steve Bannon. We no longer have to worry about any of these folks from the MAGA right that are going to try to impose their will upon the American people, circumvent the Constitution, run for a third term, violating the 22nd Amendment of the Constitution, or not violating it, but finding a way to wiggle your way around it. You know why you no longer have to worry about that? Because Trump has played his card. It ain't about just being the president. It's about remaining in power even once you leave office. Think about what's happening here. Think about what this man has done and is doing. Think about the friends and the associates he's generating. Think about it for a second here. And it all makes sense. You're listening to this show right now, and I've gotten all over Trump because when he decided a couple of days ago to let the former Honduran president that was going to be in jail for 45 years off, I said to myself, what level of consistency is there? Is that not flagrant hypocrisy? You bombing boats in the Caribbean. You're claiming you're trying to keep America safe. You're talking about fentanyl, you're talking about cocaine, you're talking about all of these things that are pervasive in our country that needs to be shut down because the American citizen, the health, the safety of the American citizens are in jeopardy. But some dude that gets 45 years in prison for assisting in 400 tons of cocaine being imported into the United States of America, that's Juan Orlando Hernandez that we're talking about here. That man gets off. How does it make sense? Because that means Trump has an ally in Central America. While you're butting heads with Maduro in Venezuela, which is in South America. So guess what? If I can't get one segment of the Hispanic population in my favor, I got somebody else. And oh, by the way, this migrant crisis that we're experiencing, that we're enduring, I need some help from the Hispanic community. I need some help from the Latino community, not just locally and nationally, but abroad. I got one now, because look what I did for him. Favors are owed. Favors gonna get paid. This is how the game works. By the way, I got a migrant crisis in the United States. Could you help me out with the borders? I got too many people coming in the flux. Could you assist me? I got these gang rivalries pervasive in our community. I need some place to ship these brothers. You gonna help me out? I need some of your assistance to possibly come into this country to help provide the assistance necessary in order to get them out of this country. Can you help a brother out? That's the game that Trump is playing. That's what he's doing. And then he turns around when you think everything is about partisanship and it's about conservatism, because Hernandez is basically a conservative, believed in free market capitalism and all of that other stuff. He ain't a socialist like Maduro in Venezuela. So I got somebody that's like-minded. So the conservatives out there throughout the world, that not necessarily the ideology itself, but to some way, shape, or form, they are about free market capitalism. They are about making money. They are not about socialism. Let me spread them out as much as I possibly can, because they're going to be relatable to me. I'm going to get credit for it. And even when I leave office, I'm going to still maintain power, except I'm not an elected official, so I really don't have to answer to anybody. Because what you going to do to me? I already made billions, and I ain't even been back in office for a full year. I already made billions. I got connections all over the place. My wallets are padded. And on top of it all, I'm doing things that at least can be perceived as in the best interest of the American people and of conservatism, not just here, but abroad. I get along with Netanyahu. He thinks like me. He might have issues in Israel that he has to deal with, looking for assistance and himself being pardoned by the president of Israel, Mr. Herzog. But it was me that Trump that put out that letter and said, let this man, leave this man alone. He's been of great assistance to peace in the Middle East. Look at us. Look at the Abraham Accords. Look at what's going on. Look at the kind of business that's being conducted. Did you ever think it would be possible for Israel and the United States to be doing business in the Middle East with the Arab world? And we're not talking about violence. Friends, friends, friends. How many of us have them? Friends. This is what he's doing. That's while he's in office. Still having to maneuver through that landscape that is the Democratic Party and folks in Congress that want to police what he's doing, if not flat out restrict it. And in the process of doing all of that, while they're fighting him, what does he turn around and do? He lets a Democrat out. Representative Queller. This man was accused of bribery. He was about to go on trial. He wasn't in office. And what does he do? Trump says he was a victim of the Biden administration. Let me read it to you. For years, this is according to Donald Trump, for years, the Biden administration weaponized the justice system against their political opponents and anyone who disagreed with them. One of the clearest examples of this was when Crooked Joe used the FBI and the DOJ to, quote, unquote, take out a member of his own party after highly respected Congressman Henry Queller bravely spoke out against open borders and the Biden border catastrophe. Sleepy Joe went after the congressman and even the congressman's wonderful wife, Imelda, simply for speaking the truth. It is un-American. And as I previously stated, the radical left Democrats are a complete and total threat to democracy. They will attack, rob, lie, cheat, destroy, and decimate anyone who dares to oppose their far left agenda, an agenda that, if left unchecked, will obliterate our magnificent country. Because of these facts and others, I am hereby announcing my full and unconditional pardon of beloved Texas Congressman Henry Queller and Imelda. Henry, and this is the key one here, ladies and gentlemen, Henry, I don't know you, but you can sleep well tonight. Your nightmare is finally over. Representative Henry Cuellar, look at the follow. I want to thank President Trump for his tremendous leadership and for taking the time to look at the facts. I thank God for standing with my family and I during this difficult time. This decision clears the air and lets us move forward for South Texas. This pardon gives us a clean slate. The noise is gone. The work remains, and I intend to meet it head on. Thank you, Mr. President. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. Go back to that first line. I want to thank President Trump for his tremendous leadership. Not for obliterating the notion of a trial, which was forthcoming. Not for potentially keeping me out of prison. Not for any of that. First line, first sentence, I want to thank President Trump for his tremendous leadership. Second line, facts. And he's a Democrat. So how do the Democrats look when they now try to attack Trump because they say he pays no attention to the facts? How do they look now when they say he doesn't provide leadership? How do they sound now when they accuse him of lawlessness? I mean, at some point in time, we just have to give the man credit. He's shrewd as hell. He really is. I mean, he is giving the Democratic Party lessons. Lessons. I mean, school is in session on how to manipulate minds and coax folks into thinking along the lines of his way of thinking. You can't sit up there and talk about how everything is partisan when the man sits up there and lets you off the hook and you're on the opposite party. Now, granted, that same representative, Cuellar, was the same guy that spoke out against the Biden administration when it came to immigration issues and our borders. So again, that falls in line with Trump, and we get that part, but he's still a Democrat. He's still somebody, if we're watching and paying attention to the politics that have been pervasive in our country over the last decade or so, everybody's voting along party lines. Now, all of a sudden, when that man has to stand up and vote on certain issues, are you sure he's not going to vote in favor of Trump? If he wins re-election and he ends up back to being a representative, are you sure he's going to side with the Democrats? How much support do you need? What have I been saying about the Democrats? Get away from the far left, move towards the center.
And Trump beat him to it.
He beat him to it. That's what he's doing. That's what he's doing. It's brilliant. Absolutely, positively brilliant politics. Nothing compares. And I am, Biden, let me be very, very careful when I say this. I am in no way trying to engage in conspiracy theories and proclaim that, you know what, he manipulated the situation and he didn't really get shot like some of these fools have said over public airwaves. No. The 47th president of the United States, when he was campaigning to become the 47th president of the United States, got shot. We saw blood trickling down his face. We saw him go to the ground. We saw Secret Service men and women come jump on the stage and cover his body. And then we saw him stand up. But here's where the politician kicked in. He stood up surrounded by the Secret Service men and women and pumped his fist in the air. And he said, fight, fight, fight to the crowd as they went berserk in Butler, Pennsylvania. And the American flag was behind him. It don't get any better than that as a politician. Nothing eclipses that. That is the greatest photo op a politician could ever have. Ever. But with that being said, when you look at the politics that are existing today and how you need to do whatever it is that you can do to quote-unquote manipulate the proceedings to some degree, and to change folks' thinking and to veer them away from just assuming politics as usual, he done pulled it off. You thought Marjorie Taylor Greene has been good over the last couple of weeks trying to transition, trying to act like she's sane and talking about, oh my goodness, we just need to do better and stuff like that. She came into Congress worth about $700,000. She departs worth $25 million. We ain't fools. We were born at night, not last night. But she ain't worth billions. That would be him. And if you notice, we talk about the six or seven potential bankruptcies that he filed for in his career as a real estate mogul. And we question whether or not he was legitimately a billionaire. Do you notice since he's been back in office, we haven't questioned that now? Whether it's crypto, Bitcoin, or whatever the hell it is, we now know he's really worth billions. So whatever game she play, it ain't to the level he plays it. Whatever game the Democrats play, it ain't to the level he plays it. And now here we are as the 2026 election is approaching. You got a year now. It's campaign year kicking in for the midterms. This man knows in order to get stuff done, he needs a few people on his side. And based on some of the things that have been happening, particularly as it pertains to the shutdown with this case against Pete Hegseth, okay, and this signal gate that they're calling it, where even the Pentagon review finds Hegseth violated Defense Department regulations. And you got the Epstein files that was in the news, and everybody thought that all of this other stuff that was going on with Trump were evasive tactics to get us not to focus on it. Knowing that the files are set to be opened, supposedly December 19th, we'll have exposure to it, even though that's plenty of time for them to omit a lot of stuff they don't want us to see. In the process of all of that, look at the friends he's making. Look at it. And in the same breath, feeding this base, when you're talking about Afghan migrants that want to come to the country and shutting it down momentarily because an Afghan shot the two National Guard folks last week. What American citizens gonna have a problem with that and gain any traction? Two American citizens, two National Guardsmen got shot. Nobody want to hear that. Anybody feel a sympathy for anybody else? It's almost to a point where he doesn't have to say America first. He showed it. With something like that, whether we want to believe it or not, accept it or not, or like it or not. Ladies and gentlemen, if ever it was apropos to say, don't hate the player, hate the game, this was it. It's what he's doing. Every time you turn around, he's manipulating minds. And everything that you throw out against the wall, against him, say partisanship, favoritism, he's all about the MAGA right, doesn't give a damn about the left. While talking junk about the left, he pardoned one of them. So he looks more sensible. Meanwhile, you got Democrats still fixated on despising everything that he stands for and everything he says. You got them now trying to turn this whole Hegseth deal into illegal activities, and one senator said war crimes. When all is said and done, do you think Trump would hesitate to send Hegseth back to Fox News for the weekends? You think he gives a damn? As long as it don't touch him. That's all he cares about. In the end, all of these people that have something to worry about, whether it's him, it's Pam Bondi another minute, it's Cash Patel another minute, whoever you want to get at, even though I don't think you could get at Cash Patel, the point is that it's not him. And in the end, that's what he wants, to be insulated. Not just legally, but with a bevy of distractions that have you talking about everybody but him while he makes one maneuver after another to buffer his stature, his cachet, and of course his wallet. Like I said, he doesn't have to run for re-election. if the next president is to be a Republican, whether it's Marco Rubio, J.D. Vance, somebody like a Ron DeSantis or others, what you going to do about it? And when he wants them to do something, you think they're going to tell him no? They'll utilize him at every turn because he's going to get done for them what they want done for them. And he'll be more empowered than ever because he won't be an elected official doing it, subjected to the constraints that come with the office. Empowered with impunity. It's a beautiful thing. He is given lessons. And the Democrats, you got one shot. Stick with affordability issues, safety issues. Remind yourself what Bill Clinton, what Barack Obama, and what Hillary Clinton are all caught on video saying years ago about the immigration crisis that permeated this country. And make sure that you get back to that. It's your only shot. Otherwise, Trump will reign, whether he's in office or not. 866-967-6887 is the number to call. That's 866-96-POTUS. Your calls before Scott Jennings of CNN comes on the show to holler at us. I know he works at CNN, but let's just say it's safe to say he ain't one of them. You get my point. If you don't, I'll explain. Right after the break, Stephen A., Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with more in a minute. 28 minutes past hour number one. Back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Call-in number, as always, is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887. 866-96-POTUS. You are listening live to Straight Shooter with your boy, Stephen A., on POTUS Radio, channel 124. Let's go to the phones. Got David in San Francisco. You're live with Stephen A. David, good evening. How are you, sir? How's everything?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, we've got a nice, quiet day in San Francisco. Sunny, even. Hey, yeah, I'm a real history nut, and as I heard you, you know, you really went on a good rant there. I kind of figure, and if you read the just the opening chapter of The Rise and Fall of Ancient Rome, it describes that paranoia was the reason why Rome fell. And, of course, corruption was a big part of it. Okay. You know, and so when you look at Trump, and his phony paranoia, you know, it's like...
Hold on, you said Trump's phony paranoia?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, stop right there. How is Trump's... What is Trump's phony paranoia? What are you alluding to?
Well, say, for example, the death of the National Guardsman, and then he not only outlaws the entire nation from immigrating to America, mm-hmm. but then he's going to pull that same snake oil on almost every other country in the world.
Okay, stop right there. Let me help you out. First of all, I'm not challenging. Let me be very, very clear. I appreciate this call. I respect it, and I'm not hanging up on you. I want you to stay on the line while I'm talking to you, okay, David? I am in no way challenging the authenticity of your words or what have you. What I'm saying to you is this. When you point to how it's paranoia, one could easily change that around and say it's politically expedient. If you love America and you are an American citizen and you are appalled by two National Guardsmen being shot and you turn around knowing that there's an immigration crisis in this country and that people don't need to be here illegally crossing our borders, right? And one of those individuals that is allegedly the gunman falls under that stipulation or that criteria, and you react the way that Trump reacted, you have millions upon millions of Americans that are like, hell yeah, that's exactly what he should do. He shouldn't have been here anyway. Now, you might think that's paranoia, and I'm quite sure over 74 million people would agree with you. Well, Trump is counting on the 77 million people that would agree with him. And I'm using the numbers that won him the election over the Democrats. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I do, but, you know, if he's down to 36%, then we probably extrapolate.
That doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything. How much faith do you have in those polls? How much faith do you have in those polls, really? Think about that, David. You've watched, you know your history, and you know many, many times that the polls have been wrong. Tell me I'm lying.
Well, I I'm a history nut, and when you start looking at the history of pre-World War II Germany and the Bund in America, they had phony paranoia that they were pulling then, too, and it allowed smuggling. You see, what I'm leading up to is when you go to Trump's history, he was hanging around with a guy named Roy Cohn from New York.
I'm very familiar with Roy Cohn. I'm very familiar with that name. Go ahead.
And so Roy Cohn was working with all of the mob families. He was the lawyer for all of the mob families in New York City. That's a pretty powerful guy.
Yeah, I remember.
And when you start looking at the idea that you could use politics to come up with a paranoia.
All right.
Like white flight.
But David, here's my problem. This is the problem with history buffs, because I'm going to give you that, okay? You're talking above people, man. They don't care about that. I'm being respectful here. I don't mean they don't care about history. I mean they don't care about how you're utilizing history to make your point. Because what happens, David, is this. The average voter out there, if you are talking about a border crisis in our nation, where over 15 million people crossed the border illegally under the Biden administration with absolutely no plan on what to do with them, right? And you couple that with a questionable economy, and you couple that with safety in the streets, that's what they want to hear from somebody like David. They don't want to hear about comparisons to Nazi Germany. They don't want to hear about comparisons to anything else from an historical perspective. How many times do you lament the fact, as a history buff, that people are living in the here and now, and they don't defer to history like that because they're too busy saddled with their own problems? How many times have you heard that, David?
Plenty, but at the same time, white flight in New York City in the 1960s is how Donald Trump got his Trump Tower, right?
So?
Did you ever see the movie The Apprentice?
Yes, I did. I did watch it.
Okay.
I absolutely watched it.
You realize that organized crime was involved in the white flight. They were the ones that would have like little incidents go on in the street that would terrify a whole neighborhood.
David, I have a show to do. It's Straight Shooter with Stephen A. I'm not going to let you give a history class on this show. I don't want to hang up on you. I don't want to be rude, but I kept you on the phone long enough. I got to get on the other callers. I've given you ample opportunity to express yourself, but you're saying stuff that is just flying over people's head, my man. I'm sorry. I got to go. I appreciate the call, though. Carolina, you're live. Somebody from Carolina? You're live with Stephen A? Who is this?
Yes. Hi. My name is Trevor Shelton. I listen to you all the time on sports radio. I was there when the blonde gentleman said that you inspired him to become a sports announcer. I'll never forget that show. It's also my birthday. It is the first time I've called into a show. So
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it, Stephen A., for you taking my call. I just wanted to make two more points.
Go ahead.
I think that as an unaffiliated person now that I am, not independent, but unaffiliated on my voting registration card, that me listening to you, I totally agree tonight that Donald Trump is garnering support from the side that he's going to lose seats on, so that he doesn't lose any seats, if that makes sense, next year.
He's definitely trying to do what he can to win the 2026 election for the GOP. And I think he's going the right route, because he's coming across as a bit more reasonable and not as dogmatic in his approach to whatever ideology you may think he's with. That's the reality of the situation. He's not falling for that. He's focused on getting what he wants. He's playing to win. He's not trying to play an emotional game and tug on your emotions and guilt you into getting this vote. He's trying to show you he's the more effective politician, that no Democrat has a snowball's chance in hell of being more effective than he is as the leader of the free world. And therefore, you should not only support him, but you should support the people who are going to support him so he can get done what you want him to get done. That's what game he's trying to play. And the Democrats, they can't do what they did in 2024. I don't care what happened in the gubernatorial races in New Jersey and Virginia, who were blue anyway. I don't care what happened in the mayoral race in New York City with Zohra Mamdani. I'm talking about in a general, in a national election, where you're talking about representatives, senators, and of course the presidency of the United States. You got to play a different game. And he's playing chess. And the Democrats better learn how to play it themselves if they forgot. That's what I'm saying.
Correct. Absolutely. And I totally agree with you. And like I said, I really appreciate you taking time to listen to me talk, because like I said, this is the first time I've ever been on the radio with somebody like this. But like the other thing I wanted to say real quick is that if you do ever decide to run for office, I'll vote for you on day one. I'll early vote. It doesn't really matter what office it is.
I appreciate it, my man.
I think you're an intelligent gentleman. You when you speak, you don't really just say whatever you think. Like you're educated with what you say, and it's hard to find that out here. I think people
I appreciate it, man.
Spoiled with like listening to like newscast. Yeah. So like again, man, I'm about to go eat birthday dinner.
Well, go ahead,
man,
go
but,
do
like,
your thing.
Thank you for taking the time.
I catch you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. If I'm rushing y'all, it's because I got an interview coming up in just a few minutes with Scott Jennings, number one, and number two. Again, it's Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Most of the talking is going to be done by me. Okay, so when y'all call up and make points, make them quick. Because they listen, the folks listening on Portis Radio to hear me, not to hear the calls. So let's be very, very clear about that. Charlie in Chicago, you're live with Stephen A. What's up, Charlie?
Hey,
Charlie.
Man, watch you all the time on
appreciate
the show.
Appreciate you, man.
What's up?
How you doing, bro? How's everything?
Look, man, I'm doing good. I rock with you. I listen to you in the morning while I'm out here working, and listening to you at night when I'm parking this trailer. But look, man, you wrong when it comes to Trump.
Okay.
Man, I'm going to put it where the ghost can get it, like I imagine Mr. Madison used to say. Listen, I know a little bit about history, too, but I'm not going to put it like the other guy put it. I'm going to put it where Trump ain't did nothing for nobody but himself and his family. You even said it. He didn't check the bag in less than a year, and he ain't did nothing for the people.
Okay.
Nothing. Now,
okay.
Policy. Well,
Charlie, I'm going to do you a favor because I got my guest on the line and I got to go. But before I go, Charlie, first of all, the minute we get back, I'm happy to come back to you. And if I can't get back to you until next week, you'll be the first caller because I know you was on the line. I wanted to hear what you had to say, number one. Number two, you can't say he did nothing, okay, when we're not in an economic crisis right now, at least not yet, when the borders have been secured clearly significantly better than was what was going on during the Biden administration, okay? Can't say that. Can't say he did nothing, all right? But that's what it is. I got to get to my next guest because he's on the line right now, and I don't want to keep this man waiting. He served as a senior political advisor and a former special assistant to President George W. Bush. He is now a senior political commentator for CNN. His new book is titled A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Please welcome the Straight Shooter with Stephen A., the one and only Mr. Scott Jennings. How are you, Scott? How's everything? How's everything going?
I'm doing great, Stephen A. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be with you. Big
well,
fan.
Man, first, I'm a big fan, believe it or not. I know you might not think so, but I watch you all the time, and I love your work on CNN. So congratulations on all your success and what you're doing. Let me get right to it. On Monday, Trump pardoned Juan Orlando Hernandez, the former president of Honduras, as you well know. He was serving a 45-year U.S. prison sentence for his role in helping drug traffickers move hundreds of tons of cocaine into the United States. Make it make sense for me, Scott Jennings, when we are looking at an administration that is bombing boats in the Caribbean in an effort to curtail drug lords from funneling drugs into the country, but you let off a dude that was serving 45 years allegedly for funneling, you know, trying to bring 400 tons of cocaine to the United States of America.
Yeah, well, in the president's view, and I'm just going to give you what the president's view is
sure.
That he may have been overcharged, or he may have been gone after incorrectly and may have been overzealous prosecution. He's made that case about some of his other pardons. I personally wouldn't pardon as many people. If I were the president of the United States, I'd be a little less on pardons, I think. But look, this is a singular power that we give to the president of the United States. It doesn't run through a committee, really. It doesn't, you know, they don't go around the room. The president can do it. He decided to do it. He got a letter from this guy. And so I can only tell you what the president has said. My view is the president's posture on Venezuela and policing narco-terrorists in the hemisphere is correct. And the American people did want the government to do something about that. So I do think he has support for what he's doing with Venezuela. Regarding the pardon, though, you know, he thinks it was a miscarriage of justice. That's the purpose of a pardon, I think. And that's his decision to make and his to explain. But that's all I can really tell you.
When you talk about a miscarriage of justice, and obviously Trump has felt that way for many years with the 2020 election and beyond, you would think that being the 47th president of the United States, having returned to office, debunking all of that stuff, I mean, shoving that stuff aside, he's clearly moving forward in regards to his actions because he's in office right now. Do you ever find yourself as a commentator on CNN wishing that he would let some of that stuff go because you're in office? It's time to move on beyond that, if not for himself, for what's in the best interest of the country. Do you ever find yourself thinking about that or feeling that way as a commentator on CNN religiously against folks who are considered leftist?
Well, I think sometimes, and look, I think the president has some points about the way he's been treated over the course of his time on the national stage. I do think sometimes his views on that get in the way, frankly, of his debates that he's having in the real time in the present day with Democrats on certain issues. But I don't really begrudge the president his feelings, to be candid with you, because I do think he was on certain matters fundamentally mistreated. He was treated by the legal system in ways that nobody else has ever been treated. He was indicted for things that no one else has been or would ever be indicted for, if not for his name being Donald Trump. And so, you know, I try to sometimes put myself in his shoes, and being in his shoes means he's not wrong. Some of the things that they went after him on were so outrageous and so overtly political and so weaponized that, you know, to be honest with you, Stephen, I think if somebody went after you or me for things that literally no one else has been ever been indicted for, we might have similar feelings. Now, he is in office today, and he does have a job to do, which is run the country and help the Republicans execute on the policy agenda. And that's what he needs to spend most of his time on, certainly. But I got to be honest. I mean, when you look at the cases that were brought against him just in New York City alone, you know, his views on how the justice system was used against him, I don't begrudge the man for him having hard feelings, truthfully.
We're talking to Scott Jennings, political commentator, senior political commentator for CNN. His new book is titled A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. I want you to talk to me about you writing this book. Why now? Most importantly, why that title?
I started writing the book in February, right after he took office. The title is derived from a phrase that he used in his inaugural address, A Revolution of Common Sense. When he said it then, I thought that is really how he has branded his political movement. He is a Republican. He is most often a conservative. But when you ask him about it, he would say, I'm trying to do the common sense thing. And I think that sort of framing of our politics is what has allowed him to attract a bunch of people into his movement who never voted or rarely voted or didn't think of themselves as Republicans until he came along. And I also put the words Western civilization in the title of the book because I have come to the view, and I think a lot of Republicans have come to the view, that we're not really just arguing about day-to-day politics anymore. We are fundamentally talking about the future of our country, the future of the West, and the things that are at play here are big-ticket issues. Our fiscal situation, the cultural issues we're fighting about, these aren't small ball items that just, you know, come and go. This is about the fundamentally about the future of the West. And I think Trump, I don't know if he knew he was signing up for it, but he is the leader in this fight, I think, for the future of the West. And on a great many issues, I think he's having some success.
Forgive the ignorance that this question may be born of, but I just don't know. Are you somebody that became a Republican later on in life, or have you been a Republican all your, a conservative slash Republican all of your life, Scott Jennings?
I've been a Republican my whole life. I came of age in the mid-90s, voted in my first election in 96. And I've been a Republican. And I've worked for everybody from George W. Bush to Mitch McConnell to Mitt Romney. And look, as I write about in my book, you know, I went on a roller coaster with Trump on certain issues over time, just like a lot of Republicans do. But I'll tell you this, it was an easy vote for me, for him in 2024, because, you know, 95% of the time he's going to do what I want him to do. And 0% of the time Kamala Harris is going to do what I want her to do. And so, you know, politics is about choices. And this was an easy choice for me in three elections.
I was asking you that question, Scott, because I wanted to get to this particular question. The Republican Party before Trump came along was one way. One would argue it's a bit different now under his regime, his stewardship. Which one did you prefer being a part of?
Well, I prefer being a part of a political party that wins.
I'm saying H.W. won. Yeah. H.W. won. Okay, so I'm just simply asking the question. Ronald Reagan won, of course. I'm just simply asking what the Republican Party was before Trump and what it is now. And a lot of people's eyes are a bit different. So somebody as educated and knowledgeable about the Republican Party as you, I thought would be best suited to answer that question.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I agree with the premise. He has changed the Republican Party. Now, on many things, he's been, you know, what you would think of as a traditional Republican. He's cut taxes. He's put conservatives on the Supreme Court. You know, I think he's kind of for a muscular foreign policy in a lot of ways. He's not really an isolationist, even though some people want to ascribe that to him. The biggest departure for him, frankly, is on tariffs. We've not been a pro-tariff party for a very long time. He likes tariffs. That's the number one policy issue in which he has changed the orthodoxy of the Republican Party. But I'll tell you, the thing I like most about him is that he takes nothing from the opposition. And this is one of the reasons Republicans supported him, and they will always support this man. He does not allow the media to run over him. He does not allow the Democrats to run over him. He does not allow the bureaucracy to run over him. And he does not allow the judiciary and some of these district judges to run over him. He fights back on everything. And the attitude that we have today about fighting back versus where people thought the Republicans had gotten, you know, sort of willing to just roll over, he totally changed that. And so take the policy out of it, the fighting attitude that he has imbued Republicans with, he will never, ever lose support from Republicans on that, because people frankly were tired of being run over, mostly by media and mostly by Democrats. And they felt like Republicans just kind of took it and turned the other cheek, and Trump won't do it. And if you want to be a successful Republican president, you cannot allow yourself to be overwhelmed. And he has not allowed that. And that's why he has a lot of appreciation for people like me and a lot of millions of Republicans out there who lived through the old iteration of the party. And now we're obviously in the new iteration of the party, as you correctly point out.
I got some bills to pay. Please don't go away. I want to get to his appreciation for you in just a second. We are talking to the author of the new book titled A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. His name is Scott Jennings, senior political commentator extraordinaire for CNN. He's right here with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with him and more in a couple of minutes. Don't go away. Back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith, the one and only Scott Jennings, senior political analyst, commentator for CNN, right here with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Scott, let me ask you this question. This book was written with the involvement of the president and his inner circle. Did they require you to get final manuscript approval, sir?
Absolutely not. They cooperated. I did a bunch of interviews, but I wrote it, turned it in, and what you see is what I did, and nobody approves it but me. So I'm the author, and I stand by every word.
I got you. No problem. Question asked and answered. I have a best-selling book myself. I kind of know the routine, so I had to ask that question. Make sure you know everybody know that you're on the up and up with that. Let me move to a different question I want to ask you about, and I go back to something that you said in 2016 in the Louisville Courier-Journal opinion column. Back then, you called Donald Trump an authoritarian, and after the January 6th insurrection on CNN, you said, quote, Trump has clearly violated his oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend and serve the Constitution. You said that then. Do you still believe that that's what happened back when you said it?
Well, you know, in 2016, like a lot of Republicans, I didn't really know Donald Trump. And I was sort of absorbing him with everybody else. And so I was, as a columnist, was reacting to him in the moment. I did vote for him in 2016 and was glad he won the election. You know, regarding January the 6th, I've never regarded that day as anything other than a bad day. I mean, a bad day. I don't like what happened that day. I don't look back what happened on that day finally at all. But I will tell you this, elections are about the future, not usually about the past. And so as I absorb that day, and then I absorb the movement of the Democratic Party and the left, and I absorb Republicans renominating Donald Trump, as I said earlier, it was an easy vote for me in 2024. You know, again, I'm never going to go back in time and say, you know, I was wrong. January 6th was fine. It wasn't fine. It wasn't a good day. We shouldn't want that kind of a day for
our
country.
But it was more than a bad day, wasn't it, Scott? People stormed the U.S. Capitol. You know, I mean, it was more than just a bad day. You don't want to simplify it that way, do you?
Well, I mean, I don't really change anything I've said or written about it. It was a terrible day. I don't want to ever see that day happen again. And candidly, I was sort of worried that we were on a slope in this country where we were going to live through those kinds of days. Now, 2024, we had an election. Trump won. We had a peaceful transfer of power. We seem to have, you know, stemmed the tide of people not accepting the results of the election. And so I regard that as a good development. But, you know, I made my comments about it at the time. I then absorbed the choices I had to make between 2020 mm-hmm. and 2024. As I said, it was really an easy choice for me. I think Donald Trump was fit to be the president, and you know, frankly, has done most of the things he said he was going to do, and I'm pretty happy with it.
But Scott Jennings, I got to ask you this question more about you right here. You're one of the most prominent conservative voices on CNN, as we all know. How do you navigate being a Republican analyst on a network where the majority of the table is often against you? How has that been for you?
It's a privilege to have the seat. Yeah, it's a privilege to have the seat. I think CNN is smart to have debating content. You know, I go all over the country and I hear two things. I love you and I love the debates, or I don't agree with you, but I love the debates. People obviously want debates. And so for us to be platforming debates, it's good. I show up every day prepared, I think more prepared than anybody else. And I have to be, because I got four or five people gunning for me, you know, in every single situation. But I think half the country, or sometimes well over half the country, deserves a solid defense and a solid analysis of how they see the news and how they're absorbing the news. And so I'm grateful to have the seat. I don't mind it one bit. You know, some people ask me, is it fair for it to be 4-on-1? And I think, well, no, it's not fair. But if you sent three more liberals, it might be fair then.
So I got you.
I'm happy with it. I couldn't be happier with it, to be honest with you.
Do you worry at all about the climate that we're living in, some of the rhetoric that you hear, whether it's from people that you're on the air with from both sides of the aisle, or just the way the president chooses to react to it? Listen, we could say a lot of things about him, positive and negative, depending on which side of the aisle that you're on. I do find myself wishing he was more of a statesman, however, as the president of the United States, instead of somebody that exacerbates situation. Do you find yourself as a commentator worried about the state of affairs that exist?
You know, I don't, if only because I look back in our history and we've had heated politics really since the beginning of the Republic. I think the difference now is the amplification of it because of social media and mass media. We're able to hear more about it than you might have been otherwise back, you know, say in the time of Thomas Jefferson. But look, we've always had heated politics. What I worry more about are two things. One, violence. When Charlie Kirk was murdered, I said on CNN, you know, I've said out loud, I'm a little worried about whether it's safe to be a conservative in this country. And I also worried about our reality. And I, by that, I mean, it's hard to have a shared national purpose when you don't have a shared reality. And I worry about, you know, if you and I both picked up our phones and looked at our algorithms, you and I might get a very different view of what's going on in the news and what's going on in our politics. And so that makes debating sometimes hard. Right. And I think it frustrates people and causes you know, folks to have heated backs and forth, but it's the lack of a shared reality. Those are the things that worry me more. I don't worry about fiery debates. I worry when it spills over into something beyond that, Scott, like we've seen in.
Scott, I got to go in 20 seconds. Rubio or Vance in 2028? Who do you think would and should be the Republican nominee?
It's going to be Vance. If they team up, they'll be very difficult to beat.
Wow. Scott Jennings, political commentator, senior political commentator extraordinaire for CNN. His new book is titled A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott, it was great to talk to you, man. Thank you for coming on the show, and I really hope you come back on. Thank you so much.
It was an honor. Thanks, Stephen A. See
you. Thank you. Take care. All the best to you. One and only Scott Jennings from CNN. Great talking to him. Look forward to talking to him in the future. Ro Khanna, representative from California. He'll be on in hour number two, but not before I get to your calls. Don't go away. It's Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with more in hour number two. Ha-ha! Welcome to hour number two with yours truly, Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Coming at you on SiriusXM. POTUS channel 124. Number to call up is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887. 866-96-POTUS. That is the number to call to your boy, Stephen A. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Ro Khanna, representative out of California, will be on the show with us a little bit later on. So right now it's a prime opportunity for me to get to your calls. So let's do that and start this hour number two off right. Let's go to Malik in Harlem, New York. You're live with Stephen A. What's going on, big time? How are you?
Uptown. Let me tell you, you're one of my big time idols from New York. But let me just break this down. I got three things I gotta say. First thing, in reference to the National Guards getting shot in D.C., my question to all Republicans and to anybody is, where was the energy when a guy named David Chris Maland, M-A-L-A-N-D, he was a Border Patrol officer who got shot at the border right there in New York by a German national. And this was in January 20th, as a matter of fact, when Trump was getting inaugurated. And where was the ban on German nationals? So if people do their homework and look that case up, it was a white German national who shot two Border Patrol officers. One died, one didn't. And so that's
So what are you trying to say?
So what I'm trying to say is I know up front the Republicans or Repetitans, as I call them, because of the Epstein thing, they're straight racists. I already know that. Because it's a double standard.
So what we're going to do is we're going to say Republicans are racist as opposed to specific names. You're just going to call an abundance of people racist.
A blanket across the board. Republicans are straight racist.
Goodbye, man. Have a nice day. We're not doing that. I'm not letting anybody on either side of the aisle castigate an entire party of people like that. I'm not doing that. That gets us nowhere. Malik, you can call back any other show. But if you have points, make your point. What if you ran across somebody who voted Republican and all they cared about was the economy? What if you ran across a Republican that didn't know a damn thing about any of those other issues you brought up, but all they cared about was safety in the streets? What if you ran across a Republican and all they cared about was being pro-life and didn't know 2 cents about the economy, affordability, immigration, safety in the streets, our education system, tariffs, whatever? You can't do that, bro. You can't do that. You know why I hung up, Malik? You know why I felt compelled to shut you down? Because what if white folks turned around and said, all black dudes are criminals? All of us? If you don't want to be castigated and stigmatized and labeled, the first order of business to insulate yourself from stuff like that is to make sure you don't do it to other people. Don't do it. There is ample ammunition to go after Republicans about every day, all day. I don't like the way they handled the shutdown. I don't like the fact that they were willing to cost 42 million people on SNAP access to food stamps that would ultimately enable them to feed themselves. I don't like the fact that the Democrats used it and weaponized it and was going after subsidies for the Affordable Care Act to get their point across, knowing they didn't have a snowball's chance in hell in getting that through the continual resolution. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. Not from either side. There's always complaints. But when you castigate people like that, you eradicate the potential for an intelligent discussion about the issues, bro. You better than that, Malik. You smarter than that. Be better. Be smarter. When you call back up, have salient points to make, which we both know you're capable of, instead of going to some weak-ass position that they can plausibly deny any day of the week. What Republican do you think is going to listen to you if you say they're racist? So every Republican's racist. So you know what that means? That if you got a job, which we know you do, and you work for a Republican, which you probably do and don't even know, you think they're racist too. Where that going to get you? Come on, bro. You better than that. Amir, you're live with Stephen A. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Stephen A? Big fan.
Thank you.
Oh, good to hear. So when you talked about just now with Malik, the past caller, castigating, you know, certain aspersions on people.
Everybody. I'm saying painted with a broad brush is my point.
Right. And how do you feel about Trump castigating around the people in Minneapolis, the Somalians, refugees and immigrants?
I repeatedly think he's wrong. I repeatedly think he's off kilter. That it's unstatesmanlike. It's embarrassing for the president to be acting like that. And I've said so on many occasions.
Yeah, and it feels like, you know, we are told to have these, you know, strong conversations, you know, without like virtue signaling. You know, I have to ask myself, when does Donald Trump have smart conversations? You know, we have this standard of how everyone else should act, but the people who are in our institutions who are supposed to be representative of us do not adhere to these same rules. We can say here that, you know, Democrats and Republicans have both contributed to the level of political, you know, conundrum that is our politics, but this was not happening before 2016, before his election.
Stop right there. Let me tell you, Amir, why you're wrong. Are you listening?
I'm listening. I'm here.
You lost. He won. You had Nikki Haley up there. You had Ramaswamy up there. DeSantis was in the mix at one point. Before him, Christie was there in 2016. Carla Fiorini was there. Marco Rubio was there. Kasich was there. They lost. They don't act like that. We got folks on the Democratic side with their verbiage and their rhetoric, although I would advise against them sometime as well. Don't come across as incoherent. Donald Trump didn't sound that way when he was younger. You watch him on Oprah, you watch him on other TV shows, you see him very, very articulate at that time. He sounds nothing like that now. And his acerbic nature and his willingness to go at people and his pettiness and how he feeds into that is reprehensible. But you or anybody else bitching and moaning about it ain't gonna win you an election. What I'm saying about him is that as wrong as he may be, how you gonna beat him? That ain't gonna beat him. What you said, what you called up here, and the point that you make, tell me how many votes you think that's gonna get you. You tell me that right now, because you wanna win, right? It ain't just about complaining about him, right? You wanna beat him, don't you? You wanna make sure you beat his agenda, don't you? You wanna make sure that his subordinates or his alkalites that are running for office and people like that you take them out, right? That you beat them, right? Is that gonna get it done? But look at how he acts. Why does he get to act that way but not us? Because he won. And it works for him. It ain't going to work for DeSantis. It ain't going to work for Vance. It ain't going to work for Rubio. It ain't going to work for these people. But it works for him. How you going to beat him?
Isn't the fact that one man can change our political stratosphere a problem and an issue?
No, let me tell you why. Because it's not him. It's the Republicans who march lockstep with him. If they stood up and had a spine, then that wouldn't be the case. It's not him. You can point to him all you want to. They don't have to listen to him. They choose to because he will help keep them in power. And they want the power. So isn't the problem them more so than him? Are you marching lockstep with just anybody? Can somebody get you to step and fetch it? You don't seem to me to be like kind of person. You seem to be somebody that's going to stand up. Well, all right then. Yeah. So if somebody got you, if you got your boys with you, because I know you got boys. If you got your boys with you, right? And they stooges. And they march to whatever somebody else says. You'd probably be pissed at them. Because you'd say, nah, I got my own mind. I think for myself. But they don't. So is the problem with the person that gets them to think the way they want them to think? Or is the problem with them being puppets?
I'm going to have to say the puppets on that one.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. Stop. I don't blame him because he does what most people in power would do. I'm not talking about in specificity. I'm talking about in terms of wielding his power and influence. You either follow or you don't. Yes. And these people choose to follow. So it's on them. I'm looking at the senators. I'm looking at the representatives. I'm looking at them. We sent them to Capitol Hill, too.
Yeah.
So it's on them. Everybody blaming him, you playing right into his hands because that gives him the attention that he wants, and then he gets to manipulate it via social media, broadcasting, cable networks, and everything else. He's playing chess.
I hear your point.
When y'all going to play chess? You going to beat him or
no
not?
No checkers.
No, Take it easy, man. I got to run. Appreciate the call. Joe in Chicago, you're live with Stephen A. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Hi, Steve A. I have more of a comment. You know, the rule of law is extremely important, and we can't just omit that. He's committed so many crimes. They're endless. The reason that the Republicans are losing is because of him, okay? It's a reality check.
Losing where?
They're going to lose every... In 2026
is... No. You don't know that. I'm asking you. You said they're losing, and I'm saying where are they losing? They haven't lost yet. Where are they losing? What are you talking about? See, the caller hung up. That's an emotional caller right there. He's saying they're going to lose. Really? You sure? Because I'm not. I'm still waiting to see what Democratic candidate is going to emerge to galvanize folks in this country. It can't be we hate Trump and that's what's going to win you an election. You got to have something to offer the American people on your side of the fence. We can sit up there and question what Trump is offering, but his constituents are rolling with him and they say he does what he says he's going to do. We love him. You know what that implies, right? That the Democrats give lip service and do the opposite. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm saying that's what it implies. What y'all gonna do about it? What you gonna do about it? 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. Your calls will continue, but hopefully after Representative Ro Khanna out of the great state of California comes on the show. Looking forward to talking to him. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Don't go away. Back with more in a minute. 42 minutes past hour number 2 back here on Straight Shooter. Yours truly, Stephen A. Coming at you as I love to do every Wednesday night over the airwaves of SiriusXM, POTUS Radio, channel 124. It is my honor and privilege to have my next guest on the show. I love talking to him. I'm an admirer of his work. You know, he and I have gotten to know each other quite well over these last few months. I once was on Real Time with Bill Maher, with yours truly. He is my next guest, and obviously he is the vice chairman of the Congressional Progressive Caucus and represents California's 17th Congressional District, located in the heart of Silicon Valley. Please welcome back to the show, Democratic Representative Mr. Ro Khanna is on the line with yours truly right now. What's going on, sir? How you doing? How's everything going?
Stephen A., it's an honor to be back on. I don't know how you do it all. Everywhere I look, you're popping up. My Instagram, my X feed, yeah, new man, shows.
Got to put in the work. Got to put in the work. Listen, thank you for coming on the show. I got a lot of questions to ask you, and I got to get right to it. So I got to maximize this opportunity with you. On Monday, President Trump pardoned Juan Orlando Hernandez, the former president of Honduras, who was serving a 45-year U.S. prison sentence for his role in helping drug traffickers move hundreds of tons of cocaine into the U.S., supposedly. Explain this logic to me, because I don't get it.
Well, I call balls and strikes, Stephen, and here's what I would say. We need to abolish the constitutional pardon power from the president. Trump has abused it. Biden abused it. Why do we have this power where you can just pardon people who either engage in narcotics trade or cryptocurrency fraud or our family members? It is archaic. It is a vestige of the past. I'm hoping I get a Republican to introduce a constitutional amendment to abolish the pardon power.
Well, you talked about you said they've abused it. Give examples from both sides of the aisle, if you don't mind, just so my listeners can know where you're coming from, where Trump, you believe Trump has abused it, and where you believe Biden abused it when he was in office.
Well, Trump, with most recently, with this ex-president of Honduras, who's bringing in drugs into the United States. Why are you pardoning someone like that? Trump abused it with a foreign crypto billionaire who had committed extraordinary crimes and was convicted, the Binance billionaire. And he, you know, had some financial transactions with his family. Those are two examples. There are plenty more. I don't think President Biden should have pardoned his son. I mean, I think you can't do it for family members. If you want to set up some process where you have an independent board of judges and making recommendations for true clemency cases, cases where people have gotten mandatory minimums, which they shouldn't have had, fine. But not, you know, when you're president, just doing it for people who you may like or family members. I don't think that's right.
Let me move on to another subject near and dear to you, because you and Republican Representative Thomas Massie led the effort to pass the Epstein Files Transparency Act, which the president reluctantly signed into law. When will Americans see what's in the files? Talk about that for a second.
December 19th, they are bound by law to release them. Now, what do Americans want to know? They want to know who are the rich and powerful people who raped and abused underage girls. 1,000 victims, Stephen, there was a rape island that was set up. And if you have 1,000 victims, it's not believable that the only person committing all that abuse was Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell. You had more people who did awful things, either by raping underage girls or by participating in a sex trafficking ring that Epstein had set up, or by covering up for Epstein. And we know from the survivors that there are photographs, that there are emails, that there are interviews in FBI files that discuss all of this. All of that needs to come out by December 19th. That is what the law requires.
Why should we believe that we're going to see the truth come December 19th when Pam Bondi and others obviously have seen some of this stuff, and we're wondering whether or not transparency is going to be the order of the day and we're going to get an opportunity to see it? One would think that they would have let you guys have access to it immediately. But waiting until December 19th in the eyes of the average American Joe and Sue is, hey, that's plenty of time for them to blotch out or black out stuff that they don't want people to see. What argument can you make to the American people that they can expect transparency when it comes to the Epstein files come December 19th?
Well, first of all, they're right to be skeptical. I mean, these women have been denied justice for over a decade. That's why I say it's not just a Trump thing. This has been a denial of justice for these women through multiple administrations. And I've taken to calling this an Epstein class, a group of people who think the laws don't apply to them. And many of the girls were working class girls who were afraid to call the police on people who knew politicians and rich people. So the American people are right to be skeptical, and we need to be vigilant. But if they play games, there are the survivors' lawyers who have seen these files. They will be able to point out that there has been redaction. There are former administration officials in the Biden administration who now are out of government who've seen the files. They will be able to point out that there are inconsistencies. And we're also getting documents from the Epstein estate. So if they are tampering with the documents and then those are contradicted by the Epstein estate, that's a felony. And, you know, now that it's a federal law of the land that Thomas Massie and my bill that President signed, my literal bill. Now, if you're a Justice Department lawyer and you do something that's a funny business, you're going to go to jail. I mean, it's no longer, okay, I didn't do what Donald Trump promised. Now you're violating federal law.
Let's move on to this, because when the Epstein survivors said that if it weren't for you, Massie, and Marjorie Taylor Greene, it probably wouldn't have happened. I wanted to know, what does that say about you and Representative Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene being able to work across the aisle? What does that say about the state of our politics in this country when you take that into consideration? And just as important, I want to know what you thought about Marjorie Taylor Greene's announcement of her resignation as a representative in the United States.
You know, I'll answer the second one first. Candidly, I was disappointed. I never thought I would say that. But we developed a working relationship. We developed a friendship. We were working on cost of living legislation together on how do we reduce healthcare costs, how do we reduce costs on rents, and I found working with her for her to be very honorable. Now, the credit of this goes to the survivors. They came to the Capitol twice. They had to be in tears telling their stories, reliving their trauma. But to the extent that Marjorie Taylor Greene, myself, or Thomas Massey had anything to do with it. It was a willingness to act in good faith. I didn't get into Twitter wars with them. A willingness to share credit. A lot of people still believe that it's Thomas Massey's bill, even though it was underlying in my bill, because we wanted Republicans to believe it was a Republican leading it. We weren't arguing about whose bill it was, who's going to get credit. We also didn't demonize the other side. We said, okay, where can we find common ground? And there are a lot of people who voted for Trump, and I treat them with respect. I think they're upset at a system that isn't working. And then I say, here are my ideas for why I think the system can be better and what I want to do, instead of spending all my time, every tweet, every post, being anti-Trump. And so I just took a different approach to it. And it turns out when you build those kind of coalitions, you actually can get Trump to bend to your will.
Do you believe that that's something that can work for you moving forward, particularly within a Democratic Party that has been accused of having Trump derangement syndrome and wants to hate everything that he does? Do you believe that that's something that's going to work for you within your own party moving forward?
The jury's out on that, same name, but I think that's what the country wants, and that's who I am, and that's what I'm going to try to offer. I'm going to say, look, we can build broad coalitions to stop foreign wars, to stop us from getting into endless wars, to deal with taxing wealth, which isn't being taxed appropriately, to make sure that we've got trade schools that are being built in this country, that we're lowering the cost of prescription drugs, that we're building manufacturing. You don't have to spend all your time just railing against Trump. He won two elections. Rail against the system that people are upset against. That's been my approach. For the longest time, people said, oh, is he not a fighter? Now there are headlines saying Khan is the first person to break the MAGA coalition. Sometimes, you know, just like in sports, sometimes fighting smart is more important than showboating. And I think that the Democrats would be better served putting forth our vision and building a broad coalition.
Ro Khanna, representative from the 17th District of California, right here with Stephen A. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. over SiriusXM POTUS Radio. Trump recently mentioned that extending Affordable Care Act subsidies might be needed, a key point in the Democrats' fight. Will you work to help get that done?
Yes, and he's absolutely right. Look, premiums are going to skyrocket in this country. They're going to go up from $44 for one taxi driver in Arizona to $2,600. I mean, it's crazy. So I'm open to doing it just for 1 year even. I'm open to negotiation on the eligibility. There's a guy, Sam Liccardo, near me in California, is working on a bipartisan bill to get that done. This is about people. We should come together. We should get it done.
Are you somebody that would have favored continuing the shutdown even up to this point if there was no sign whatsoever that the Affordable Care Act subsidies is something that could be negotiated for?
I think we could have gotten the negotiations. I mean, look, I was calling for us not to just to give in on fighting for those subsidies. And the reason is I thought we should be voting on the troop pay. We should be voting on paying federal workers. Congress shouldn't be being paid when there's a shutdown. That should be a law. We should be locked in the congressional the congressional capital a bit and not be allowed to travel if there's ever a shutdown. But we should have fought to extend the tax credits. I don't think we fought hard enough on that.
One of the things you said when you were speaking in the aftermath of the shutdown, you recently called for fresh Democratic leadership and highlighted a disconnect between leadership and grassroots priorities. What lessons does that critique hold for the party's direction in the next election cycle, in your estimation?
You need a new generation of leaders. Look, I consider Senator Schumer. He's had a great career, 50 years. But, you know, politicians make the same mistake as great athletes. A lot of times they don't know when to retire. They do one or two seasons too long. And it's nothing against him that I'm saying he's not the future of the party. Let's get some new blood in there.
But, Representative, if Chuck Schumer's gone, the likelihood is that AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, at least some people have speculated, would be in that seat, and she'd be obviously win a Senate seat in New York City, and who knows what kind of power she'd wield, and ultimately will pull people further to the left. Is that something you endorse?
I think she'd be great. But look, we have a broad tent party. We got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who I agree with her on sort of Medicare for all, national health insurance. We've got Abigail Spanberger, a great governor in Virginia. We got Mikey Sherrill. I'm saying have different people of different wings of the party have some new ideas and a new generation of leadership.
But I'm speaking more towards the attitude as opposed to the ideology. Like, for example, your willingness to negotiate, to listen to both sides, to have engage in a give and take, understanding, for example, that it was your bill, but it's Massey's name that was written all over it because it needed to be presented as a Republican idea as opposed to yours because you saw the big picture. One of the biggest critiques against the Democratic Party is that they haven't seen the big picture. And it was their way or the highway, and you're pulling people stronger to the left, and that compromised y'all level of success, which cost y'all the 2024 election. Are you of that ilk? Do you believe that, or are you more along the lines of being a negotiator per se, which is something the progressive left has never been accused of?
Well, I'm a proud progressive Democrat. I support Medicare for all. I support $10 a day childcare. I think that people in my district, $18 trillion of wealth, they can pay more tax so that people have an ability of healthcare and education. But I have never thought, Stephen A., that I have a monopoly on the truth. And I always believe that you need to approach people who may disagree with you in good faith and learn from them and be humble and be open to a compromise where there is a compromise needed and negotiation where negotiations needed. And I've treated Trump voters with respect. I've said, okay, why are they not voting for us? What is it that they're upset with? How can we have a conversation? For 9 years, I've been going to rural communities, factory towns, deindustrialized places to have those conversations. So I would describe myself as a proud progressive Democrat, but with a temperament where I put the country first and willingness to compromise and willingness to listen and a great admiration, love, and respect for the American people.
I think one of the things that may work against you, respectfully, Ms. Representative, is that you're one of only of a handful of lawmakers who refuse PAC and corporate money. How has that choice shaped your influence in Congress, both positively in terms of credibility and negatively in terms of fundraising or legislative alliances? I'm imagining it'll be pretty difficult, you being the person that you are, which most Americans do believe in, no question about it. But in the same breath, how receptive is your party to those positions that you take, knowing that a lot of them don't think like that?
Well, it's been some tough sledding in terms of I don't raise as much money from PACs. So you can raise $1 million from PACs every election cycle. Mm-hmm. I get some PACs like Apex spending against me right now in my own district because they don't like that I called out some of the killing in Gaza. I say what I believe, but ultimately that's what people on the right and the left believe. They don't like this idea of big money. They don't mind people building wealth. That's the American dream. They don't mind someone in my district who came up with a new technology like Jensen Huang and the CEO of NVIDIA. And if he's a billionaire, people say fine. But what they don't want is someone like that saying, okay, now I'm going to put my billions of dollars to have more of a voice in our democracy than you do. Why? I mean, a truck driver or a administrative assistant or a nurse has just as much say in this country, should have as much say as a star basketball player, star tech leader. And that is why this money in our politics is so corrosive. I would argue that there are two things. I used to say money in politics is the biggest problem. And now I would say probably extremism in our politics. But those are the two biggest sins in our politics.
You sound like a presidential candidate as opposed to a candidate for Congress, sir. Did anybody tell you that?
Well, Stephen, hey, you're the one. They're floating your name. They're floating your name.
I'm floating yours.
I've already lost a debate to you. I said to a friend of mine, as long as I'm not debating Stephen A., my friends still rib me for my performance on Bill Maher. They say, you know, all his clips went viral. You couldn't get a word in. I say he gets paid to do this for a living. I'm just a humble congressman.
Yeah, well, I'm just a humble broadcaster. I don't know nearly as much as you. Certainly probably wouldn't be as effective as you are. I'm wondering, have you considered higher office?
Look, I believe that I have an economic vision that this country would benefit from. I represent a district that is producing $18 trillion of wealth. I understand the economic future. And my view, I call it economic patriotism, is that we need to prioritize the economic success in every community for every family in a modern economy. We probably don't have time to get into what I believe needs to be done to make that possible. But as someone who's seen modern wealth generation, I believe we can do that across this country by mobilizing the private sector to create tech jobs and AI jobs and trade jobs and investing in communities across the country. And that to me is the big, that should be our new national purpose, to bring this country together in renewing the American dream for people who feel it's left them.
How do you feel about all the noise that has emanated out of California for Gavin Newsom? In other words, people are saying that the governor of California will likely be a candidate for the presidency in 2028. How do you feel about that? Where do you stand on that?
Well, look, he's going to be a candidate, I'm sure. He's going to be a strong candidate. You can't underestimate the governor of a big state. And he's going to say, look, I'm going to hit Trump and I'm going to fight back against Trump. And here's all the things I've done against Trump. And if that's what people in the Democratic Party want, then he's got a shot. People like me, if I were to run, I'm going to say, here's my vision for where the country needs to move forward. And you know what? If you're living in a red state or a Trump district that has been deindustrialized and hard hit, I'm going to actually focus as much on your community in building it up, whether you vote for me or not, as I am a community that voted Democratic. Here's a Marshall Plan for America. My focus is how are we going to get families in red states and blue states succeeding and thriving in America across the country? And people will get to decide. Do we want to keep having a tit for tat? They punch us, they own the libs, and then we try to own them? Or do we want to move forward as a country and come together? And that's going to be up for the American people to decide.
Would you run against Gavin Newsom if it came to that?
I think there would be plenty of people who run against Gavin Newsom. But certainly if Gavin enters, it would have no impact on my decision to run. We just have a very different temperament and vision of what the country needs.
Former Vice President of the United States, former Democratic nominee Kamala Harris recently announced that she wouldn't be running for the governor's seat in California, and there's no indication that she'll run for the presidency again. Do you think she should or shouldn't?
That's totally up to her. Stephen, hey, this is harder than Meet the Press. You get this is a.
I'm just asking. You know,
I've always respected Vice President Harris. Partly she's a first Indian American, African American woman. When I was growing up in Pennsylvania, if you told me an African American, Indian American woman would get 48% of the vote, I would have said you're crazy. So she's broken a lot of barriers. I think that she's underestimated as a political leader. I'd vote for her over Gavin Newsom. I'd put that make some news. But it's up to her what she wants to do with the rest of her career and how she wants to serve.
I wasn't going to go there, but since you brought it up, why would you vote for her ahead of Gavin Newsom? Could you clarify that? Why?
I think that she understands the broad coalition in our party. I think she speaks to understands that she wasn't handed anything in life. She had to struggle. She was a daughter of immigrants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've always found her deeply authentic. I mean, I know people say, oh, word salad, this. In my interactions with Vice President Harris, even where I disagree, I found that she's someone who's coming at something from a place of conviction.
I recently saw Representative Eric Swalwell announce that he's going to be running for the gubernatorial seat, governor's seat in California. A, what do you think about that? And B, why aren't you considering a run for the gubernatorial seat of California, considering that you represent the 17th district, you're incredibly familiar with California, and you know what Californians need and want, and you probably could get the job done. Why him and not you? And what do you think about him running?
I like Eric. You know, I'm supporting Tom Steyer, but I also think Eric would do a great job. We've known each other for a decade. He is someone who's a prosecutor who understands the public safety issues. He understands the homelessness issues. And I think he'd be a strong candidate. I supported Tom Steyer largely because Steyer has a plan on PG&E and holding PG&E accountable to bring down utility prices in California. And he also said he's not going to take any corporate money in Sacramento. Sacramento is a crazy place. I've never served there. I don't think that that's the right fit for me. And my focus has largely been on federal issues and international issues. And I love the job I have. I mean, I represent such an incredible place in the world that both needs to be regulated, but also is contributing. So that just was not the right fit.
These boats being bombed in the Caribbean by the president and his administration, 1 minute, the next minute, the former president of Honduras is being let out of jail when he's supposed to be serving 45 years for trying to, you know, facilitate sending 400 tons of cocaine to the United States of America. How do you view the potency of the Republican Party now compared to the Democrats as we approach 2026, which is an election year for the midterms?
They are far less strong than they were when you and I about a year ago were on Bill Maher. You know, I remember at that time, Trump was riding a high. I mean, he had given a very strong inaugural speech. I didn't agree with a lot of it, but it was a strong speech. He had come in with a whole host of action. He was there to get the country moving again. But they have lost touch. I mean, why are we starting a war, a regime change war, possibly in Venezuela? He was elected to stop these wars. He was elected to bring down prices, not to hang out with billionaires and build a ballroom. And I think he's partly, it happens to second-term presidents. They kind of lose touch. I was giving free advice to the president, not that he's going to take it. I'd say, go do more of your rallies. Go meet more of your base, because I just think that he has lost touch with his base. And as a result, the Democrats are finding our footing. We had a great November. We had a good race in Tennessee where Afton lowered the gap. Right. You know, there are 53 more bluer districts than where she ran. And I think we're going to have a very successful 2026.
And why specifically do you think you're finding your footing? Because I know what happened in New Jersey and Virginia and the mayoral seat in New York City. But aside from that, which was expected, by the way, why are you feeling like you found your footing now more so than in recent memory?
Republicans are willing to vote against the president. I mean, Massey and I, for a bill, now that we're no longer have to call it the Massey bill, which was a Rokana bill, a progressive in the Bay Area. 70 Republicans were willing to vote for my bill in defiance of the president to the point that the president had to flip and say, okay, I support the bill. That's not the sign of a president that is strong. Now you have Republicans who are calling out Pete Hegseth for what he's doing and saying, kill them all. You wouldn't have seen this a year ago. You have Republicans willing to call out like Don Bacon, Donald Trump, for his tariff policy on coffees. So suddenly you have more Republicans willing to stand up to Donald Trump. And that's typically what happens to a second term president as they're becoming a lame duck. And I see that dynamic far more now.
Well, the Democrat that compelled them to turn against their president is the man I just finished talking to right now, representative out of the 17th District of California, Representative Ro Khanna, right here with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Thank you for your time, sir. Always good to talk to you. You know you're always welcome back on. You know that. Keep up the great work. Keep fighting the fight.
Thank you, Stephen A. It's always an honor. Appreciate you.
No problem. Take care. 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with your calls to close out the show. In a minute. 51 minutes past hour number 2. Back here for a few minutes before we get on out of here until next Wednesday. Appreciate y'all sticking with me. Let's go to Sean in Buffalo. You're live with Stephen A. What's going on?
Hey, Stephen A. I'm a huge fan. Both me and my mom watch you, and we both thought you should have received a daytime Emmy for your appearance on General Hospital.
Thank you, sir.
But, I have a question regarding Candace Owens. Yeah. Is Candace Owens fueling conspiracy theories about Charlie Kirk's death, or does she have a point about Turning Point USA? Recently, she made some comments regarding that. I didn't know if you had any thoughts about that.
I have no thoughts about it because I haven't seen it. I don't know what you're talking about. I really, really don't know. I can tell you this. There are things that I've heard from other people. They certainly don't make me feel comfortable. I've interviewed Candace Owens twice. I find her to be highly intelligent, sharp as a tack, But in the same breath, stubborn to a fault, because there are times when I hear certain things, sir, without knowing and looking into it, that I do find myself asking, why are you going there? Like, the only thing that I'm truly familiar with is when she was talking about the French president's wife. My attitude is, why? For what? You know, why go there? That's what I find myself thinking. But it's a prerogative. We live in a free country, and that's what she feels the need to do. And, you know, so be it. Okay. Appreciate the call, Sean. Thank you. Let's go to Mark in Ohio. You're live with Stephen A. What's up, Mark?
Hey, Stephen A. Thanks for taking the call. You kept on asking people, how are you going to beat Trump? It all comes down to one thing only, affordability.
Okay.
And right now, Trump is to the point where he's hanging around all his rich people, which, you know, Stephen A., we all know you make some money. So all the rich people are like, oh, yeah, everything's great. Everything's amazing. Couldn't be any better. The rest of us are like, no.
Okay, can you do me a favor, please? Could you stop lumping me in? I'm 58 years old. My ass was broke for 50 years. You know, I can't stand when people do that. Like somehow, some way that I can't identify with a working class and what it caught, the price of eggs and gas and all of this other stuff. You remember a decade ago, I was unemployed. You were making more money than me. Everybody was. I was living off the little bit of savings I had. I was broke as hell. Okay? I grew up in the streets of Queens, New York, broke. Welfare and all of that other stuff, too. And spent the vast majority of my life scratching and clawing before I ever got paper. Can we at least recognize that and stop falling for the same old okie doke that the second somebody got money, suddenly they can't relate to stuff that they've been relating to for decades, but just because you came over some money in recent memory, suddenly you don't have any connection to it? 50 years of my life, I was broke. All right, but I'm saying 50 years of my life, I was broke. That's what I'm saying.
Understandable.
All right. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Just what I'm saying is that right now, for instance, like Costco just went through and filed a lawsuit against Trump over his tariffs. These are things in which the normal person looks at and they're like, why are you doing that?
That's fair.
Costco $50 billion.
Yeah, but here's the problem. When the Democrats, if the Democrats' solution is to address the economy involves more government spending, and that elevates a $37.8 trillion deficit even higher, which we know generations are going to have to pay for down the line, are we really winning when that's the formula? If somebody else is trying something, I don't know if Trump stuff's going to work with the tariffs. I'm not sold on that. I'm not sold on it at all. Nor am I blaming every migrant that crosses the border illegally for all of our troubles, like his administration seems to be doing. But in the same breath, let's not act like this deficit that we're in, these troubled times with the economy and everything else, have nothing to do with the Democrats. Reagan was in office. H.W. was in office. But so was Clinton. And I know he left with a surplus when Gingrich and them were in Congress in 1994. And then you had Bush. Mm-hmm. And then you had Obama for 8 more years. So again, and you had mm-hmm. Biden as well. Both parties have contributed to the state of affairs that exists in our country.
Agree 100%. I agree with you 100%. But just to let you know, we just borrowed or are going to be borrowing $3 trillion to pay for those tax cuts.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's $41 trillion.
Can't argue with that. But again, you can't put that on Trump. That's on all of them. That's on both sides.
Agree 100%.
All right. Appreciate the call, man. Thank you so much. Kendall in South Dakota, you're live with Stephen A. What's going on, man?
Yeah, I'm a Republican Trump voter. I voted for Trump 3 times, but I live in the real world, and I realize the pendulum in our politics is swinging violently back and forth. I fully expect in 28 it's going to be really hard left. We're going to end up with a president, Gavin Newsom or AOC, more than likely. When it comes to the illegal immigration issues, I just wish the politicians would tell us the truth. It seems like most of the Democrats and a good chunk of the Republicans are fully in favor of open borders, and they want to turn us into this global citizen zone and just do away with the citizenship, and we're all just residents, which is the end result of what they've done to us. You know, where they, you know, a lot of times a citizen gets treated worse than the illegal or non-resident.
Listen, we're running out of time, Kendall. Let me tell you something, though. I don't believe the far left is going to win the presidency. I don't believe that works in this country. I don't give a damn what happened in New York. I don't give a damn how they think in California. When you think about the vast majority of American citizens and the electorate under the umbrella that we're under, I don't think there's any way in hell they win a national election. And I'd be the first to tell you, I'll campaign against it. Hell, when we, instead of joking around or alluding to, let me tell you something, I might run for office before I let that happen. Hell no. Hell no. 80-20. The hell with the 20 on the fringes. The vast majority of American citizens, 80% of us, whether it's right or left, we're towards the center. Reasonability. That's what it's all about. Now, I ain't got no desire to be no damn politician. I try to tell you, I'll change my damn mind in a heartbeat before I contribute to letting that happen. Hell with that extreme leftist crap. Woke culture, cancer culture, identity politics, bump all of that. I want a strong economy. I want strong borders. I want a strong military. I want everybody being looked out for. Everybody. Everybody. No man or woman left behind. This is America. We ain't trying to make anybody like Venezuela and all of that. Bump all that. That's it for this edition of Straight Shooter with Stephen A. I gotta go. That caller just irritated me. I'm out, y'all. Until next week. I can't go for that. Because America will sink if that happens. Until next week, y'all. Peace and love.